My name is Nokuzola Ndongeni from Eastern Cape, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mirenchi Kinyen. I'm part of this committee and I am from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, everybody. I'm another deputy in the Wala Tsuni. I'm a Chairperson in the Member Committee.
Everybody this side.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, number 11. Last week, I am leading of the committee. Quite a lot of committee. Thank you very much.
Introduction, sir, would you can you introduce us?
Thank you very much, Chapati. My name is Ikumele Mchogo, President. Thanks.
Yes.
Everybody who is in this room, they can introduce themselves so that we know who is who.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jackie.
Yes.
Good morning,
everyone. And our interest and our office. Thank you. TG, your team. Thank you. Thank you very much and welcome. Are there apologies for this meeting? Yes, just so that for the record.
Yes.
You press it up.
Good morning,
President.
The minister is in a cabinet meeting, so he's late for this meeting.
from Mbulelo Bala.
From?
My colleague.
Okay.
Mbulelo Bala. He is at Bala.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. We also wish to consider the approach of the Deputy Minister who has just returned from the lab.
Who is that?
Deputy Minister Mapu.
What point is
she? She has just returned from the lab because she has been traveling.
Okay.
She will not be able to.
Okay, thanks. Yes, Madam Dona.
Yes, I would like to give an apology for my colleague's honorable Anonjini. He should not be well.
Yeah, so all apologies, I think, are accepted. We understand. And that Wednesday, it is indeed a cabinet day. It's not because the minister doesn't want to be with us. And I'm told that he'll join us later in the process. So we not go, so the political overview by the minister will have to put it aside, unless if there's anyone who wants to do it on his behalf. It could be called beauty in the army. Thank you very much. We'll first start with sport and recreation. Is it where we started? Yeah, and just say so. After this presentation, I hope that members here will be able to understand or what you mean by sport, you know, what is your conception of what sport is all about, including school sport, provincial active recreation, community sport and others. So because we are new members in this committee, and as you can see, some of us haven't played sport in a very long time, but we only watch Orlando Pirates, or some do watch Kaizer Chiefs and other small teams. Yeah, we'll be by at the end of this meeting, we'll be understanding what you are doing. Then, and at the same time, you will get a briefing in terms of how far you in terms of integrating this into one ministry, because we talk about two departments with two departmental heads. Everything is times two, you know, possibly even times three in other senses. But what is the roadmap? Because it doesn't help us listening to three programs that were in different ministries. So we have to form, in one or the other, we have to come up with one department. So you'll brief about what is the process, how far are you, and what will be the implications in terms of service delivery. And I know that this kind of things can cause tension in the staff. People don't know where they stand, you know. There've been lots of talk, rumors about the government downsizing, you know. How will this thing affect us? Is it part of the, is it in the package? So that was on a very lighter note, but it's a very serious note anyway, because we will want to know what is happening. I'll give over to you, PG, just to brief us on. Some of the things you can skip, I think you can leave them to the minister and to come and explain. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. My colleagues and the DG here. We, Chair, I've had the brief you say you want us to expand the scope so members could really understand. I'm afraid it may not be that impactful because essentially we have 20 minutes to do the presentation on the strategic plan as well as the APP and the other 20 minutes. telling you last year we would not delve into detail about the operations, for instance, of the school stock program as a whole, how it is rolled out and how it works and so on. That's going to be a bit of a talk for you in such a congested time frame. But however, we would list out and really try to ensure that we check the numbers and all. Previously, I know what we have done with the old select committee when it did. We set aside the whole day for a workshop to take the numbers through the entire process and for them to know. But in the context of the presentation of this nature, I doubt it would be possible. The second thing that I may also highlight is that it is unfortunate that the minister will join later because of credit commitments. But it would have been nice if Easter had passed since we had the update and where we are and all of that. But we can certainly assure the chair that the work towards full integration of the department is underway. And the placement and every other thing that we have done, approved the new logo, we have just done all the things that are necessary to make sure that we become a seamless one department. The complication remains that we will remain two groups for this financial year. And I think that's what this forum accountability and accounting point will be up until the money press next year when the new appropriation is made for the new department. So this dichotomy will coexist try to reduce as much as possible and to seamlessly integrate the systems and personnel as much as we can during this period. But the minister will give the update on how far we are in those processes. But also to assure the chair on the last point you raised, don't worry, my colleague here is in Kibe. He's going to take over the new department. For me, this is my first and my last meeting of this committee, and I will gladly move on so that the seamless transition will go forward. So with that said and done, our strategic plan has been updated to now reflect where we are for the new administration, the sixth parliament of this administration. We have looked at where we should be within the context of the NDP and the challenges we have had. And the annual performance plan, therefore, represents the first of five tranches of reaching one of those objectives. So here's a five-year plan, long and we say by the end of the 5 years, these are the things we must have achieved. And we break that into five parts, each being each financial year of the sixth administration. And what we are giving today is the installment of the first year of what we're going to do in year one, of what we set out to achieve, right through the entire term. And with that said and done, Chair, it appears I am technologically challenged, Chair. There is a response. There we go, Chair. Those are the key influences to our annual performance plan. And these are the things that really are at the core of guiding our considerations and key policy decisions that we make and that we set out in the practical plan that we work first. The National Development Plan, knowing that it is an overarching plan for the entire country. That plan itself points out to about seven injunctions in sport, and those seven injunctions are highlighted. They range from both recreation as well as hardcore sport, and they speak to the core of our transformation. And these are the things that we lift out of that plan that have implications for us as a department responsible for the control of sport and recreation. Again, we also look at the medium-term strategic framework, and then we take the targets that government has itself set out, and we say, how do we contribute to those priorities that government itself has set out? And our medium-term strategic framework seeks to certainly government has outcomes, things that come the end of the period of the National Development Plan, how should the country look like, and those outcomes have been set out and explained. We, the London Council, are clearly firmly within outcome 14, which speaks to an empowered citizenry, and which speaks to us heading to build a new society. And from the ashes of the apartheid divisions along racial lines, we have to build this new society that has been established for years, that is actually bringing a sense of patriotism to the new agenda of the country and its transition where we are going. And that outcome expresses itself by us utilizing the two portfolios, sports as well as arts and culture, as the key catalyst for uniting our people and ensuring that they unite. Ultimately, the goal of this outcome to achieve a democratic, non-racial, and prosperous society. And that's what we are about. Basically, in truth, the mandate of building a new society rests on the shoulders largely of this department. All other things that are done really are supporting to the cause of what this outcome seeks to do. We also looked at the strategic plan that I've spoken to and the government's report that we submit on a quarterly basis to the parliament. And we also look at the white paper that really is our policy, key policy statement about sports in the Republic. So, there, Chair, if anybody wants to understand what exactly we are trying to do and the outcomes of what we are trying to achieve in the day, that will be covered in this broad policy statement called the white paper. In there, we go to town in explaining ourselves and our the politics behind why we are doing this and the policy position we are adopting and the rationale for adopting such policy positions and the key considerations we are making in coming to that point. Then, of course, key legislation within our sector. First and foremost, the primary legislation of this sector will be the National Sport and Recreation Act, number 110 of 1998, as amended. And that act primarily drives and gives and empowers the department as well as the minister and grants them key powers to ensure that the key objectives of the white paper are carried through. In November 2012, we hosted the National Sport and Recreation Endeavour and we announced the first National Sport and Recreation Plan under democracy. This plan sought to revert the legacy of the 1956 sports plan. For those who are quite familiar, back then in 1956, the apartheid government brought sport firmly into the apartheid machinery. Multiracial teams were banned. South Africa's participation across racial lines was prohibited. That plan ensured that the white child was funded 9 times than the black child in sports. And the provision of all of this, and it also, long and short, prioritized about the four codes. It actually said rugby should be played by English Africans speaking white South Africans and cricket, English speaking South Africans, and netball was to be played by all women of all races. The only proviso was that they couldn't compete against each other. And swimming was introduced as a life skill safe for all white children so that it could be in all schools. If you look at that plan, largely for what it was intended to do, it succeeded. And in the codes that they were designated and were heavily funded, even today, South Africa still remains quite dominant on the international competitions in those particular codes. However, it had left out the majority of black people out of that. And the current plan of 2012 seeks first to reverse that legacy of apartheid. But secondly, it also seeks to increase opportunity of access to our people and to ensure that everybody has a fair chance of playing sports and of succeeding in sports. The resources have not increased. They have remained fairly the same over the years. We are the least funded department other than women, so we are the second smallest department. Even by size, we are the second smallest department now, at least with the merger. It props us up a little bit. At least now the champions are on and with our combined budget now, we would seek to punch above our weight. And I think that's where we are now. And lastly, the chair is the transformation charter. That plan of 2012 came with the transformation charter. The charter itself is a statement of wish of how our team leaders in 2019 must look like. This charter is a 20-year charter that the sports sector has signed up to. We have appointed a transformation commission that monitors federations from a point of view of transformation and issues annual reports on how far we are. There is a target setting regime in place where voluntary targets are set by federations themselves to say with the amount of money we have, this is how much we think we can achieve in this time frame. Right now, the first cycle is coming to an end. Now at the end of 2019, the first 5 years of that cycle will have ended. In that cycle, the targets that have been set by 18 participating codes now suggest that at the end of the 2019 cycle, they should have achieved 50% like representation within the emerging teams. Mostly, if you look at that, the next step of success, our 60% of the federation are set to achieve that 50% target. And the others, about 28% more, are closer to that target. They are within the range of 45 and 50. And the rest will not meet that target. And we have already begun remedial actions and plans on how we respond to that. I've explained this already, Chair, and I'll move quickly. Those are the intentions of the NDP that I've spoken to. And as you can see, they speak to promoting of the sharing of public spaces and common experiences among South Africans. This speaks to our recreation mandate, and it speaks to the public facilities such as kiddies play parks and all of this. We have to locate them in strategic areas where they can reach their appropriate spatial planning, and they can encourage communities from different walks of life to interact with each other. You also see that it speaks about adequate resources school stock, which is a sector that we've been working on for now. Currently, our entire budget that goes to provinces is 40%, so already being fenced for school sport. We believe school sport program is the bedrock of our entire development continuum. And if we can think excel on many fronts, but not there. Because if we fail there, then we will feel the effects in the future when there's no adequate pipeline. But I think the last 20 years have taught us exactly that. And you see, with the performances of our national teams, particularly in football, where you see the depth of talent and all of that. And it is the mistake of the early years of democracy of not investing adequately in that pipeline. And so we have to focus on that and be quite responsive in that regard. It also speaks about encouraging communities to organize sporting events and leagues and championships. That speaks, Chair, to our community sport mandate. And this is now encouraging citizens us to play. Not for the purpose of getting talent or for winning medals or anything. That's for lifelong participation in sport, and that's why we have access and that. And that largely speaks to the recreation mandate. And now I want to move, Chair, to one of our major targets, is that one. We have established a baseline with GCIS back in 2011, and our target for 2019 has had remained that by the end of this current financial year, 66% of South Africans should really feel very proud about their national teams. Are we about to achieve that 66%? Not really. I think we have to be realistic. And the last measure, which was last year, we're sitting at a meager than 8%. So, and you see, our biggest problem is that is the previous racialized aspect. Even from a spectator point of view, majority of people who still watch rugby remain white, and the majority of people who still watch football remain black. And because of the demographics of our country, black people like the majority. And if a black team like Buffalo Bills, which is the main team we are taking in that survey, doesn't perform that well, so certainly the majority of the population is going to be out and proud of these teams. And I think that's what we see in that track, and that's what we realize. And for this reason, the minister has announced that he will call a national football endowment during the current financial year for us to keep down and go further into the challenges we set in football. The challenges aren't just the issue of the pipeline. The their name. Is it the way football in our country is structured in the first place? Is it the manner of the relationship between the PSL as well as SAFA? And is the role and the role delineation between the two? It's also about the unregulated practices in football, spending quite widely from player agents and what do generally, if you ask me, chair, the law unto themselves. They do as they please. We are giving indications of where they are interfering in the selection of who must play, and coaches that don't draw the line of these influential people often get sacked. And you see, there's all of these challenges that are there, and we want to drill down, and we don't want to handle anything piecemeal. We want to look at the totality of the football system as a whole and say, what are we going to do with the major coach of the country? Now, I move chair to those are the five programs of the department, and this is the sports plan I want to say. The sports plan itself is divided into various categories. First, the active nation. Active nation, chair, is a document. It's about encouraging students, as I said, to participate in sport and to be given opportunities. And that remains our biggest program because it speaks to the mandate of mass participation, of getting as many people as possible to play sport. And this we deliver through various platforms. One is community sport that I spoke about, Saturday leagues. You see in the Eastern Cape there, they have during Easter tournaments almost in all traditional authorities where they compete for a scalp, for a sheep there, and they slaughter it, and if it's the winning team, that sheep that's there, and then after winning. And it happens all the time around Easter. Even in Gauteng, you find the team who take the cup, and you find all of this. All of these tournaments we do support, we do provide for, and for, that's one of the platforms. The other major one is school sports. And the other one is club development. It's supporting grassroots clubs and encouraging them to continue playing and by providing their equipment and attire to do that. Next program is the Winning Nation. The Winning Nation program exactly is what it says. It's intended to make sure that South Africa is dominant. The NDP requires of us that by the end of 2054, we must, our results must equate the results of a country of a similar GDP across the world. Basically, we benchmark ourselves around countries like Brazil and so on. So we are saying that if those countries are performing at that level, certainly there's something wrong with us if we are not performing adequately the same. And yet our investment is this high. To deliver this point, I just need to highlight one thing. Look at the Jamaicans. They are quite focused. Their sports plan prioritizes only three codes. And if you look at them now, they are prioritized athletics, and even athletics, they are not all over the show. They are quite clear. They are looking only at track. They are not looking at events. You will not see a Jamaican pro in the league or this class. Or they focus their money on track. And even in track, they don't do like marathons or long distance. They do short distance. The longest they run is 800 meters. And they are quite focused, their coaches are on that. But look at what they do. They send a team of 13 people to the Olympics. They come back with 16 medals. We, South Africa, at the last Olympics, we sent a team of 268 people. We came back with 10 medals. So you can already tell you. Even the Kenyans are much better than us. In essence, they send a team of 12. And they know they are going to get them all the medals on long distances and all of that. They don't venture into things like swimming, they don't waste their money investing in those codes, they know they are not going to be dominant and compete. And yet they come back home with 14 medals. So there is something horribly wrong with the system we are playing. And so therefore, our viewpoint is that yes, this plan prioritizes us, focuses us. Unfortunately, not everyone will be happy with that type of prioritization. Then the enabling environment is key. For instance, now we are dealing with the issue of broadcast regulations of ICASA. There is an amendment process taking place. We are participating in that. But long and short of each chair is that we are intending is that to actually allow the sports sector. If codes are to grow, they can't grow without television. And television space in South Africa is quite congested. And without migration to digital, and we're still on the analog signal for most of our codes, and with just the four channels that are available, and then the terrestrial television, we have a challenge that sport is not exposed adequately. And we South TV, then you don't get the sponsors, because the sponsors give you money to improve on the fact that they are on this on ABC. And without the sponsorship, as well as broadcast rights, which are the two key drivers of income for sports, most of the coaches will never go to become professional. They'll remain as small advantage in their small scale than what's currently happening. So we seek to liberate that. Of course, broadcasters won't like what they're saying, they're about to fight us. Super Sport is already threatening to go to court and everybody, but let it be, but we are steady and on the course to make sure that we liberalize the space for sports. Then lastly, the transversal issues and utilization of sport as a tool. We are attending to all of those matters that cut across all codes, including good governance. Nobody's going to give you money if you are corrupt and you're not managing your finances very well. And we have been quite hard on federations that don't toe the line. We have entered athletics, we dealt with people who sold themselves in the defenders for 1 month, and so we dealt with them today. We enter cricket with the constant inquiry, we cleaned up there. After our venture there, when we pulled out, they turned the corner, they made a profit of about 10 million after the first year of intervention, and they have since been on a good trajectory. We had entered netball when they were on the brink of collapse. Today you can see, you can even see the performance of the team just 5 years later, not so long after the intervention. And we have entered the, we now went to Tascot itself, the mighty Tascot, and we entered the fray and we are cleaning out there. The implementation process is still going ahead in the fray. So we are quite keen and committed to this cause. And now I want to move quickly to the bills that are going to come from Parliament. First is this one, the Sports and Recreation Amendment Bill. It has already been tabled in the National Assembly, and we think that after the first committee, they will refer it to the NCOP. And I think this is where we require this committee, the NCOP, to help us champion the amendment. We will have to chair, I think, the committee will come there to do a thorough presentation on the bill and to present it to the committee so that we know what we are seeking to achieve within the law and how we can go on that side. On the international influences, we are quite busy on the international scene. First, we are members of the United Nations as a country, and there is the UNES, which is the body of all ministers of sport globally. It takes place every 5 years, and the last one was in Kazan. It adopted the action plan, which South Africa has been elected the secretariat to implement on that Kazan action plan. We are also key participants in WADA, the World Bank Development Agency. And in that regard, we even now hold the foundation was chair for Africa, and we are championing anti-doping processes in there. And again, in the African Union Sports Council, we are participating in Region 5 of this council and also the continental level. We were now preparing for the Camp 6, the Committee of African Ministers of Sport. The region has agreed to nominate South Africa to chair Camp 6. When it does meet, and we are contesting there for that space. And ultimately, those are the key influences that are there globally. But we participate in a whole host of things, from we are the chair of CJEPS within UNESCO. South Africa is also the chair of the Committee for Physical Education and Sports for Africa. There's a whole host of, we can give you a whole list of what we are doing to challenge the global aspect of sport, which currently favors Latin Europe and America, but does not favor ourselves, Latin America and Asia. We are challenging all of that. And I'm not going to go into that in the jealousy of time. So that's our budget, chair, administration, active nation, winning nation, sport support and sport infrastructure program. As you can see, the lion's share of our budget goes into active nation. That's where school sport is, community sport is, club development, and all of our programs are there. The bulk of that money, though, Chair, if you look at the next slide, is really money that goes through province. It's the grant. 620 million is the grant. And since we are talking to the NCOP committee, provinces, it's important to note that 6 of the 9 provinces do not buy the FNASPOT program. They purely rely on the grants. Although constitutionally sport is a concurrent function, it has to be budgeted for at all the national, province, as well as at local municipality. But as you can see, only 3 of these provinces budget for sport program to conduct extra programs for sport. This is a great anomaly that must be corrected, and the guilty provinces must be held to account and must be asked to correct what they are doing and to provide more adequate resources for sports. And that's the division in terms of the economic classification at the bottom here, Chair. It tells you how we are distributing the money, and you can see how much we spend on compensation of employees. This is bound to change once the entire national macro organizational government process is completed and posts are analyzed and people are placed and everything is done. So that is bound to change a little bit. And again, as we also share, particularly the administration budget, is bound to also change considering the improvement in efficiencies in this sector. Now, some of the key programs is the HOTBAT program, and that program is quite key for us because it promotes active lifestyles among the citizens. It remains a key cornerstone of what we do in our model. I'm moving quickly to share that. We have the Rural Sports Development Program. This program was conceptualized in response to the fact that most rural communities, as well as farm communities, did not play sport at all. We were quite concerned. We needed a deliberate focus and a deliberate attention and a stimulant for these communities to have this. And we have since signed an agreement with the National House of Traditional Leadership. Currently, we have two traditional households in the province who are delivering this program. We are expanding into 5 during the current financial year, through the grant, and we will have in excess of 50,000 participants over the financial year. In as far as the youth camps are concerned, they take place in December. This program really encourages the chief citizenship and encourages new patriotism among the youth of our country. Those who have been to camp, once they graduate, they form a movement called the Trailblazers, and who then become key ambassadors. These programs are some of those that will be reviewed and harmonized with what happened in culture, because the content is quite similar and more or less related. We also have the Indigenous Games Festivals that promotes the 9 qualified codes of Indigenous Games, from Igedo, Hati, Indonga, and all the codes that are quite unique to our country continue to be played on an annual basis, and we've seen a seamless growth in the sector. One of our biggest programs remains the Big Walk, which encourages citizens really to take up walking as a way of physical activity and to do it on a daily basis. But once a year, on World Walking Day, which is the first Sunday of October, every year by SAPITA, the International Association for Sport for All, we then deliver the Big Walk as a key program. In Chwani alone, more than 30,000 people walk on that day. And in all provincial capitals of our country, except Johannesburg, and who held in partnership with us, all other provinces as well, have walks that on average averages about 10,000 people walking. So it's quite big, it's a huge thing. We believe this year is the year we will surpass the biggest walk run by the private sector, being the 702 Walk the Talk. We will surpass that this year with certainty at the levels of growth, and we will, this work will become the biggest work in the country done by government. And the UNITE campaign is a campaign, obviously, of social cohesion that calls South Africans to unite behind the mission as well as the values Nelson Mandela espoused. And consequently, one of our biggest programs in the nation, as I said, to many the school sport program. I now move to some of the highlights and programs in program 3. And there, as you can see, we have this pre-led program. That one, where we have finalized our engagement with the Defense Force. We seek to train soldiers who are recruited purely for purposes of their experience and within the Defense Force to train them. In fact, on the African continent, as well as in India, many of the nagaris that go to the Olympics actually comes from the defense force and police. Even in this country, we used to be quite dominant in martial arts and in karate and boxing, which were sports very promoted within the Olympics and the defense force. And even in such things as archery and shooting, South Africa, in the earlier Olympics before we were banned because of apartheid, the 1928 Olympics as an example, indeed we were winning medals in shooting. But ever since the ban and ever since the defense force disengaged and no longer ran their programs in this sector adequately, we then forfeited the opportunity to expand in that base. We have now introduced this. The defense force has identified 30 military bases in which the program will run. We have already started with Saldana, with Apache, Sanas, Osor, and with the Marshall Park. So the work has already begun. Indeed, those two were survivors, but we will now expand to all the 30 over the next 5 years. And that's where we are with Operation Secret, with the former minister, Tulas Mercy, said this will become a weapon of mass destruction for us in sports. So we look forward to the day it becomes that way. Then we have the Ndumlangi and Golf Development Program. It has three legs. It looks at the development chapter, which currently has 7 youngsters. South Africa has produced a number of golf champions over the years internationally. Like Kim Hosen, Lenny L, Gary Player, we can go on and on. Only problem, all of them are white. And we have never produced a black champion ever. And we think that through this program, we now have within the pioneers within the program, 13 of them who have already reduced their handicap to below 16. These are the youngsters, and if you consider that they are between the ages of 18 and 21, and that handicap, then you can see that they are likely to be well beaten. So we are investing in those kids, and we are expanding this program now to all other 9 provinces with at least 1 chapter per province now. In Gauteng, we have 2 chapters already. Then in this program, there's also the reward and recognition program, and the flagship of that is the Heritage Sport Awards. It happens on the second Sunday of November each year. The Sport Awards, I don't have to tell you about. You see it on TV. It is the only program ever on TV that plays on Super Sport and Chelsea timeline. No other one that is expected in that. Then we also have the G-Sport Awards to recognize women in sport. With the vision of former minister, they have decided that it's best to isolate women and to have a key focus for them. This award happened in August this month, and we recognize and applaud progress of institutions within women's sports, which is still not on the same level. Then there is Safricom. The next one is coming in 2021 after the Olympics, and the Safricom is the South Africa Sports and Recreation Conference, and it is both the active research as well as academic research that takes place at that time. So we would encourage members to actually participate in 2021 when this thing does come. It's a great eye-opener. You get the best experts from all over the world in different areas of sport, and it actually enriches the practitioners within the sport environment. Which brings me, Chair, to the leagues that we have currently started. One of our biggest problems is the training of coaches in sports. We don't have a lot of coaches, and the minister in the current government is quite open. One of the key things is that the ratio that is good on average for participants to a coach should be within the region of 1 to 25. And the UK is the only one who's accelerating towards reaching that ratio of 1 to 25. Meaning that 25 people that you want to coach them, you need to have a focus on each of them. You can't coach 8 people and you hope you will be flexible. It's the same thing as you see in the classroom, that the adopted ratio is 1 teacher to 40 kids. Then you can pay some attention to that. In fact, modern city schools as well as some private schools reduce that ratio by half. In their classrooms, they are just 20 kids. And the teacher then can have a good focus on all of them. So in sports, 1 to 25 on average. And of course, in sports like golf, it has to be 1 to 1. Otherwise, you don't get impact. So, but the average is 1 to 25. So, but South Africa's ratio is 1 to 870. And the countries we compete against, like Australia, is 1 is to 43. New Zealand, 1 is to 37. So do your comparison and see that one of the things, we don't have qualified coaches, and that kills the entire system of our
yes,
but then we have the team child that we have to leave, we have started this week, it's going strong, it has become independent. This is the first year one of the teams and they can run on their own. We have done the netball one as well, and that too has succeeded in running. We still support the basketball national league to make it viable on its own. And we have launched the new softball Premier League. It was won the first season. Next year will be the second one and we'll grow stronger. Once more, we have also done, I think they have not put it up there, but we have also done the volleyball Premier League. And this season is also running. And the Transformation Commission has spoken about it, and I will not bore you about that, which brings me to the last question of the National Basketball. Right now, we have money. Municipalities are allocated their money. We used to have something called the Building for Sports and Recreation Grant. That grant was taken away from us by the Treasury. And the Treasury said, no, there are too many grants. Let's consolidate them and give one major grant for municipalities, and they created the MIT. But since then, sports has been untold for us. All municipalities are spending the money intended for sport for all other things. And I think it's only fair and reasonable. If I'm a mayor, or I'm a municipal manager, and people don't have water, and I have some money to build a swimming pool, the chances are that I will do that swimming pool out by swimming. I'm going to put the money in the circulation and use it for all other things except sport. And that's exactly what happened. We did a run in 2014 with KwaZulu-Natal, and we realized that for all these municipalities, only 4% of the available money for sport was at 20%. And that can be right, in all fairness. So we have argued that the grant or the 15% of the MIG, the fee component, should only be allocated to one big grant. Right now, that 15% makes up about 2 billion a year. We think that with that 2 billion, if it was to come to us, we would be able to eradicate the legacy of apartheid as well as the shortfall and the backlog on the sport facilities within the next 10 years. And we are confident that that money should come. And we'll do a good job at it. We Treasury has said we must run a pilot, a 5-year pilot in the year 3 of the 5 years. And they have ring-fenced about 300 million of the 2 billion and said, okay, you show us what you can do in the 300 million. So on average, we run about 30 projects across municipalities, and we're assisting them to deliver quality facilities. And maybe one day, the team will come there to show you the pictures of what the municipalities themselves are doing and what we are doing with this grant. And members will make their own comparison and see. They're giving a nice picture, put side by side there, of where we show a facility, one municipality saying they have built for 17 million. And we will show you what we built for 7 million. And then you will make your own picture. The pictures don't lie. So, and we are with that statement, all we are saying is that our system is working and we are making a strong case for the Treasury to ultimately give us the whole degree so that we can do a good job at it. And I think that will be my end, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, DG. Are there people in the team would like to make additions before we give over to members? Or expanding on something. I know that we cannot finish everything in one sitting, and my intention was not even to explain why we're having our sports and culture in one sitting, you know, in one presentation. You know, we can't do justice to everything. Mm-hmm. But that they will be sending questions, and then expecting to get written answers to those questions. And when it, I mean, that will actually help us to bridge the gap. Honorable members, here is the presentation from the department. Any questions, points of clarity? Honorable Gillian, Honorable Christine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need
councillors to address. The other issue is the municipalities and the role they play in, especially in recreation facilities. If my memory serves me right, municipalities is supposed to use some of the meat funds to make sure that this service is being rendered. Now the answer when budget cuts are discussed, sports, and I'm giving you a practical example, sports is at the bottom end of priorities for municipalities. And you must compete with other bigger infrastructure projects. So the department thinks that it is good to assist in putting those sports facilities into our area. That is for the big funding. The other issue is the lotto funding is assisting, but it's also just a little bit. So how are we going to make sure that sport infrastructure projects get the attention that our communities need in the country?
I'll just say just before the question that you know we are disadvantaged by the absence of the minister. We know that he's going to come in later, but I thought we would have talked about, you know, some of the pressures we are facing at the department, particularly related to lots of issues that made international headlines, like the Caster Semenya issue, you know, debacle. What role did the department play in that? I know we cannot do these things in one sitting. And you talked a little bit about the SASCOC management, governance issues. We are very much interested in those because, you know, the fate of South Africa, youth and sporting people with those bodies. Of course, you know, our netball team has done us proud. There will be other things that I thought the minister would have talked about, like, you know, congratulations to Akani Simbani and many other artists who performed very well, athletes who performed very well, Duvuyo and many others. But again, the other thing is, you know, what are we doing in terms of having our sport televised in all channels, particularly SABC, because SABC is our channel. It is funded by, you know, the taxpayers' money. Our money is actually funds SABC, but we cannot even see some of these things that are these international performances, I mean, you know, competitions. Ordinary people who don't have DSTV cannot see them. So I thought maybe if the minister was here, he could have touched on those things, but in his absence, you will talk to them later. But when you respond, if you could just shed some little light on some of those. Over to you, Honorable Christian.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that, you know, first of all, that it's really encouraging to see that sport has taken a, I won't say a center stage, but that has come up. I see that you dedicated 40% of your budget to school sport, which is extremely encouraging because I come from a teaching background. And years ago, you know, as a teacher, you wouldn't be placed in school unless you had some kind of background in giving some kind of school.
made board or paper. Otherwise, you know, we were a very hard to stress teacher. And, you know, I feel that if we can bring sport back into our school, the current disintegration of our society, our youth, will somehow start building up again, because a busy child obviously, you know, keeps them out of drugs and crime, and eventually a busy child that's busy in sport and so on, eventually you become successful in academic career and go on to study, and it's a proven fact through my career that sport is an integral part of a child's development. So I'm very encouraged by you know, the whole sporting arena getting this kind of highlight. But my problem is that although all these good plans are in place, what is the integration that your department has done with basic and higher education? What is the integration that you have done with social development for ALMI? What plans are in place to see to it that the money is spent correctly at school and that sport is actually going to feature classes, that the money is going to be used correctly, and that our sporting facilities will be upgraded, and that teachers will take interest in giving sport. In fact, that the whole sporting curriculum returns to school, because I think in order to grow sport in our country, we need to start at grassroots level. In other words, we need to start with the child small. So that's basically my main concern, is that how it's going to be integrated with the three departments, basic education, higher education, and social development. The other question that I have is your club support. I'm also encouraged by the fact that you are supporting clubs, because I believe that a lot of people who have been seriously disadvantaged are now very actively involved in clubs. And you know, to get those people featured again and get those people out there, rugby players and so on, you're seriously largely marginalized and now be featured again. How are you going to assist those people? Just briefly.
DG Fume. Indulgence.
Thank you very much, Chair. What we are doing with the project, we have two successive ministers of sport, Tula Silesi and Thokozile Khaza, had tabled as cabinets as well as written to the counterparts of the treasury to try and compel the ministers to issue treasury instructions containing the provincial treasuries to actually budget for sports. But if you look at the constitutional arrangement, the truth is the treasury doesn't really have, the national treasury, the power to compel the provincial treasury on how to budget. That is the job of the provincial legislature, to actually deny or refuse to approve a budget that doesn't meet certain parameters as the appropriations committee in that province. Now, we are at a disadvantage, and that's why with the NCOP it becomes the key catalyst for this, because members of the NCOP, they are permanent delegates, but they are also roving delegates that come in. And this whole liaison with the provinces becomes very key for us, particularly in the oversight role. And as I said, there's nothing wrong. This committee has jurisdiction actually to call the premier or to call an MEC of the premier to come present here and to explain as to why sport is not being budgeted for, and to be held to account so that that can be achieved. And that's why we think that the avenue of best addressing this, other than what the department has to do, is to engage with this committee to make sure that the committee takes the responsibility. And that says that, but hang on, here's a constitutional mandate for you to look at. Why are your own provincial resources from the not being allocated for this important problem? And I think that
the department can do that exercise of showing you and harvesting all the information from the EMD or the estimate of national expenditure and show you what each province is putting aside and for what purpose, and to then show you what idea they should be putting aside for us all. And so we can empower the members of this committee to do their oversight work efficiently if they tend to agree with what our proposition is in this regard. I think that's not the first part about the property. The second one about the municipalities, indeed we think that it was a mistake to take our country. We should have always been transparent, but yeah, it's what happened at the bridge that happened some time ago, and we are told by the Treasury that the Fiscal and Financial Commission, the FFC, doesn't like the proliferation of grants. And now they want to say jacket us into the one size fits all. And we argue that no, it shouldn't be. We should look at objective factors. And in this case, we can't go on the way we have gone on before, where sports money is not being spent as well. And daily we are putting municipal managers and mayors and councils at a very awkward situation where they have to make a decision about the essentials like water and all of this, and suddenly MRL cut. In fact, many mayors write to the minister saying, please give me a kit and trophies and medals. I want to run a cup here. And we say, hey, look, you are supposed to budget for that. And you are supposed yourself to provide for this thing at your own level for your own cups and so on. But that's exactly what happened right now. So we think that the money must be separated. And that's why our call remains quite strong. The previous select committee supported us wholeheartedly. And they monitored us on the panel and on the results we presented at each quarterly meeting, how far we are, because that pilot is key. We have to succeed in that, because if we don't succeed at delivering quality facilities on time, with value for money and every other thing, and with a good maintenance plan, then President would say, even if we give you the money, you're not going to do all you're going to have. Because they were saying to us, you have always been the 1 billion department. All of a sudden, overnight, you want to become a 3 billion. Where's your capacity to spend this additional 2 billion? And then we said, no, but you can't use the issue of capacity against us. Then they give us a special grant in compensation to say, all right, hire engineers and hire all of these things and prepare yourself for the ultimate test. And we have done so. We have now the staff who are hiring architects and all of those type of things in the infrastructure to prepare ourselves ultimately for when this 2 billion mark come. But there's no substitute for us providing the support we're providing to the municipalities that don't have capacity and the facilities the most, in order for us to prove that actually our model is much more consistent and delivers better facilities than when the municipalities are doing them on their own. And I think that that's where we are. Like I said, we are on a third year of a 5-year plan. At the end of the 5 years, our portfolio of evidence must be sourced from what we present to this month, to the Treasury, to say, look at what we have achieved over the 5 years with the limited money we gave us. And look at what the rest of the municipalities have achieved with even a greater budget. Don't you want to now give the whole 2 billion for us? And I think that's exactly where we are with the process. Lotto funding is there, it's quite limited. We sport called for Lotto. But when the Lotto ultimately came, we were the least of the beneficiaries. Even as a culture, we must do that. They were accidental beneficiaries of what we did. Before, we saw the modeling in the UK and in Australia. But when ultimately the money was allocated, now all of a sudden charities were getting much more people. Even as a culture was getting ahead by the percentage from us. And we said, but hey, we called for this thing, but you are giving it to us. And ultimately, we are still where we are. The lottery money is not enough, and even the current operator and in such a depressed economic environment is not making a lot of money. Ultimately, the money available in the city is about 300 million on average every year, to be distributed to schools, to us, to federations, to parliaments. It's just not enough, and facilities constitute a minute portion of what the lottery is able to achieve in this regard. But the most disheartening thing is the current regulation that actually sports. DCI extends the regulations to say that there must be something called the minimum of yours. When you apply this year, then you can apply next year. school of for a year and apply again. But now, if you are given a grant, most of the projects, if you are to really be successful, you must get like 10 million to make this thing work. And the lottery say, ah, we can give you 10 million in 1 year, so we're going to give you 4 million. And then you have the 4. But the 4 is not enough to really deliver this program. But then you must cool off and wait next year. But you would have been better if, because my share funding, maybe they say to you, when I give you 4 million this year, 4 million next year, and 2 million in the outer year, then you can plan better. And now I can implement my program over there. But now with this cooling off thing, it's simply situated for me to get away. You can't say nothing now. You are preparing for Olympics. You are training something, then you say, now we must wait. You can go home. I'll call you again in a year when I get some more money for you to continue with the training. Training has to be continuous. And preparation has to be so. So I think that when some of us in other departments got done understand how the portfolios work, it's not a simple thing. It's not like a play where you know the season is this long and then people are just going to deliver this thing and the market theater and then they are done, you know? So, and then they can cool off for 1 year and then come back and write another play and go elsewhere. With sports, it's not like that. You have to train continuously and there can be disruptions. Now the regulations are forcing that discussion. On the sports broadcasting, I just start to agree with you. Chair, our biggest problem is the SABC. It's actually bankrupt. I think everybody knows this reality that too, about it, we're sketching about it, but even they themselves acknowledge that they don't have the money, they have to raise the money, and now the Minister of Finance has just announced that they are likely the appropriation bill should be approved. There will be part of the entities that get some form of agreement. Ultimately, they run as a sports channel themselves. They rely on the other three channels. And the fourth one on DSTV platform, SABC 44. But essentially, SABC 1, 2, and 3. So SABC Sports, when they go to say rugby, and rugby says, well, for the credit card, we will send it to you for 700 million for you to show me. And then they say, all right, here's the 500 million. More than half that money is already down the drain. Because they are buying something that they really can't show to the public. Because they simply don't have channel space and airtime to be able to play that. So then the manager who has got that has to choose the matches and say, I'll show the Cheetahs versus the Bulls, I'll show the Bulls versus, and this match looks like they will have more people watching. So when are they getting it? Then they have to go knock. And they go to the head of SABC 1 and knock them. On such and such a day, can you stop generations so that I can play this match? And then the head of Channel 1 says, generations of the advertisers, Unilever, Tata Brands, their cumulative income for that day is 47 million. Will you please SABC Sports give me that 47 so I can remove all of this, so I can refund those people that are not sure they are addressed from the time you are pushing to the people. So the market side is already lost from where go. And it's already stacked against them from a point of view of being competitive of showing sports on TV. And when you consider that fair, the fact of their own doing, their own management and their decisions and where they are, they are in no shape, no position now to buy anything. They can't even afford the football, right? The football says, okay, pay us what you paid us the last time. I'm looking 10 million. And then SABC says, no, we can only afford 10 million. That's what we have. And football says, oh, there's no way we can give you. So they are at odds. They are 100 million different. There's not even the beginning of the negotiation. So even our government, we just have to watch and say, well, floating a dead horse doesn't mean it's about to jump up and start running. Well, you're waiting your time in that. So that's why we say we have to liberalize the space. And we have to make sure that the monopoly of super sport, in monopolizing particularly the exclusivity clauses that they exist on this, we believe they are partially anti-competitive, but we also believe that they are suppressing sport. They buy every other thing to keep it away from the SABC, so that SABC doesn't have contact. But they don't really intend to grow those platforms and to grow those programs. And we think we must change all of that. And even the mass carrier regulations, we have to review all of that if sports broadcasting is to be competitive and the smaller group are to be given space. So this chair will require a much more lengthy presentation on the mechanics so that you can understand how it works. Quickly on Netball, we are hosting the 2023 Netball World Cup. Cape Town will be the host, and we have won the rights. And our team, you have seen how it has prepared. We are putting money aside for legacy, both for team preparation, but also importantly as well for purposes of spreading Netball across the country by provision of Netball courts right across. We will deliver between now and 2023 about 90 Netball courts, and also our 10 wooden floors. Two of those floors will be delivered and presented to Netball Africa to promote a tournament equal to the African Cup of Nations for Netball. So, and we have agreed with the International Netball Federation to do all of that work, and we have set money aside for the service of the financial aid and the commitment we need to International Netball Federation in this respect. On the Casasimina matter, we have now appealed the decision of the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Switzerland with the Federal Court in Switzerland, and we are waiting for that court to make its determination. Representation and documents were filed, and we filed on time. We believe that we were half done by the CAFs, and we believe that our case is quite solid and quite strong. And even global human rights bodies, including the United Nations, have passed special resolutions that say that this is a violation of human rights and invasion of one's privacy. We are exploring even other avenues now. We are approaching as well the European Court for Human Rights, because the IMAF is actually a human jurisdiction in Monaco, and Monaco is a signatory to the European Charter of Justice and Human Rights. Mm-hmm. And we are asking that court to sanction them, because basically they are a touristic pattern operating within the jurisdiction of the court. And we are asking that court to actually pass a ruling against them, making it difficult for them to operate from Europe. And we are also approaching the General Assembly itself. We prepared the power for Telco, and we are asking that the Telco table on the agenda of the General Assembly, for the General Assembly to pass a resolution and to consider the Human Rights Council. The decision of the Human Rights Council was taken unanimously and without a vote share. I think all countries that you concur, this is a moment. And so FCC is the key would be that, but we think that all these other measures will put on press for the similar case. However, Chair, we have to say that even if we lose the case, we think that our athlete is quite psychologically strong, and our athlete has also expressed herself with the support we have been providing and the counseling, and for fear of breaching the doctor-patient confidentiality, but we have to highlight that she's prepared to take on the challenge. She's in a fit state of mind. She has already begun testing other events in athletics. She has recently ran the 3,000 meters and she won. So and the 3,000 meter is not part of the codes or sub-codes that are said to be limited by this imposition. So she has herself declared that she wants to make Sebastian Kohl the president of the IAAF go mad. She says that she's going to make him a special project. She will do everything. She will throw the javelin and throw the discus and run long distances and do everything that's so frustrating. But she's not going anywhere from the scene. And if this means the end to a short distance running career, she will explore other subcodes of athletics and she will be good at it. And the winner, the 3,000 meter, in a field of those who have always been dominant in that field, has voted well for this quest. So I don't think that we must consider that it will be the end of it all. Ideally, she must be allowed to compete, and it's a matter of principle for us to fight it. But however, we think that we're in a good space. On the passport matter, Minister Smithing has talked tomorrow, and we have been quite hard on them. There is Mutomi Jamza, former DG of Sport, under Steve Chester, who has been appointed as a ministerial liaison person to and facilitator for the implementation of the on top of that matter. On PE, yes, we agree with you. In fact, the PE teachers have been the backbone of the delivery of the school support system. And even Sumaya here, our DDG, used to be a PE teacher initially. And with the destruction of some things are ongoing. The democratic government decided to amend the school act. And with the changes, all of a sudden, school sport was no longer compulsory. In the apartheid days, it was automatic, you had to play at school. And the teacher had to enforce that you play. If you didn't want to play, you needed to apply not to play. You needed to continue the school while you didn't play. You needed to bring a doctor's certificate or something to say, I'm sick, I can't play. But we liberalized the system and we said school sport is not only compulsory, it's an extramural activity. And as a consequence, many children say, I don't want to play. And you can't enforce that because it's an extramural activity. And secondly, also the teacher, the bigger teacher union, says that now, because this thing is extramural, it's not part of the curriculum, we're not supposed to do it. So if we have to do it and I'm to remain on Wednesday at 2 o'clock with this children, I want overtime. And the Department of Basic Education says, this overtime will add 4 billion to our salary bill and we just want to end it. And it can be done. So as a result, it's a negotiating and a bargaining chip for that and school sport purpose. Because all over the world, school sport is driven by teachers. So if the teachers are not there to do it, that's why the majority of the schools not playing school sport program are in the townships and in the villages. But the rest in Heaven are not playing because the teachers there and their own teacher unions have taken different resolutions and want to give the teacher unions like that. So we'll always have a challenge until this matter is done, which brings me to the issue of the curriculum. We are told that there is curriculum fatigue. And that
just summarize, we've got two minutes. Yeah.
I took long, I'm sorry. There is curriculum fatigue, and with it, there is no appetite to change the curriculum and make PE a standalone subject. We hope that when the curriculum review process is done, better when it does, which we are told in the internet, that that may be the case. Then you asked us about the integration between DBE and education and that. With DBE, we already have an MOU standing. And now we have just finalized a draft MOU with higher education for the purposes of the university card. We have a challenge there with something called the city card, and that is usurping the university sport association, the recognized sport body, and there is competition about who must be in a tournament and what must happen, and we are trying to resolve all of those matters. With DLD, now we were working with DLD up until now on the initial development program of sports in schools, but we are told that that function now with the macro organization of government is migrating to the education. This then means we must now update our MOU to now have this. We have finalized a manual with the minister who was in next month. That manual is on motor development skills. In sports chain, if you are like a sport like gymnastics, if you are already 12 or 13 and we haven't done anything with you, we are finished. We'll never do anything about you. And also some motor development skills like eye-hand coordination or eye-foot coordination. If we don't keep in the formative stages, which really are stages from the year 3 to 6, and in others year 3 to 8, if we don't give you those skills then, it will not matter what you do with you when you're in the yet. When it's all over, you'll never be a great prospect, and we must forget. So those skills that are required have to be instilled as any childhood development. But as you know, Chair, between us, you know that many of them, 90% of them are in communities, in some garage and so on. And after they give them soup, they say, la la, la 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 la, and there is no sport or motor development skills being imparted. We have now done a manual to make it easier for teachers at those levels to impart their skills to the children. And yes, the club development program will continue with it, and we'll continue supporting them with equipment, attire, as well as financial support. And lastly, Chair, is the teacher incentives. We're giving the teachers the incentives.
Thanks, DGI. You're eating into the time of the next presentation. Of course, it's sitting through. The temptation is, you know, I could listen to you the whole day. because you're saying things, and my other worry is that you said you live in the, you know, you go itself. We haven't just yet listened to him. I'm talking about your presentation now. But you know, there are certain interventions that we have to make as the NCOP. All of us come from provinces. Like, you come from provinces. There's no one who comes from outer space to work in the department. And we know what is happening in the provinces where we come from. And there are certain interventions that are expected of us as members of the NCOP, but I don't say that we are building on what the fifth parliament, you know, some of the things that were left hanging will be completed by this sixth parliament. And that interventions, that you're asking us to make certain interventions, but interventions are database. So if we do not have data, we may actually do more harm than good. So before we can even think of taking certain steps based on this information that you gave us, it will be important that we have a session, you know, before the end of this financial year, you know, where you take us through all your programs, you know, what you should do. Like information sharing and, yeah, and there are certain things that we cannot do anything about presently. Like, you know, saying next week SABC should do 1, 2, 3, we cannot do that. But I think as this committee, as this, as the NCOP, we should meet with the, you know, have joint sittings with the committee on the portfolio committee on communication, so that we get further in-depth information about what is happening in that area of work. Thank you very much, Timbul. And usually what we do as a committee, where, like I said earlier when we started the meeting, that you may not, we given the time that we have, we may not raise all the questions that we want to raise. So some of the questions will be done in writing and they will be sent to you, DG, so that we can get the written answers to those questions. And when we meet again later, we'll, yeah. Thanks a million. Let's give this opportunity to arts and culture. Everyone, I also call them arts, sports and culture all the time. You know, there are lots of things that we hear, you know, and when we read our documents here, it's just like Mzansi Golden Economy Strategy, what are those, you know, the very interesting things. Lots of let me not eat into it because our time is already taken by sports and culture. I mean sports and recreation. And DG, we all know that, a little bit of what I know about culture is that culture is not neutral. I'm told that when a child recites the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, it doesn't mean that that child is happy. There's not, I mean, you know, it's just a recitation. But that culture represents the interest of one class against the other. And culture in a divided society will be different from a culture in a society that is, you know, where there are no divisions. Over to you, DG.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, good morning to honorable members. And just stopping here, the technology, but also let me in the meantime, for this chapter. Yeah. then probably chairperson under the whole arts and culture and the component in the arts and culture. And we say that we find the market firmly entrenched on the construction of the country and that in particular section 16 that talks to freedom of expression and that incorporates the artistic creativity, the freedom to receive and impart information or idea. But also it talks then to academic freedom as well as freedom of scientific research. But section 16.1 really emphasizes this freedom in relation to art and artistic creativity. But it will then also emanate from section 30 of the constitution that then entrenches the issue of language and culture. And then we've got section 32.1 that talks to access to information, as well as section 9.3 that talks to equality, and section 10 of human dignity. So, in a nutshell, that is the essence of where our mandate arises in relation to the Constitution. Then the department has got also legislative mandates, and it's quite a number of them. I will not go through them because of time, Honorable Chair. But in the presentation, they are there on slide 4, and that talks to also the white paper on art, culture, and heritage. Came off 1996. I can just hasten to say, Chairperson, that this white paper is currently being revised. And it has been tabled and it will be one of the things that the Select Committee Dweller of Parliament will be preoccupied with during this financial year and in order that it gets addressed and be finalized. And you'll see that in the presentation when we got to the end of the legislative framework that is expected of the members to attend to. But then there are issues of the National Development Plan and what is the mandate as of you. At least we are now back on top of the technology. And then we've got the rest of the Act that talks towards our National Heritage Resources Act, the Heraldry Act, the Geographical Names Council Act, the National Archives and Records Services Act. All these and other legislative mandates that inform our work. So when we then look at the expression of these mandates, we are expected to create the enabling environment so that arts and culture can thrive. And we've got five key pillars in that regard, and that is the arts and culture promotion and development. We then also have heritage promotion and preservation. The third pillar is then, of course, what DG also really spoke to about nation building and social connection, bringing South Africans together and building a new nation from the ashes of. And then we've got access to information, and that mandate really directly talking to the memory of the nation, archives, records, and libraries. Mm-hmm. We're then also responsible for language development and promotion, in particular indigenous languages, the languages that were previously marginalized. In that one, the chairperson, this is the year for indigenous language. So, Siyathemba ukuthi mhlawumbe sizodiscuss the heritage and month kakhulu asibo September. Mhlawumbe i-select committee ibe nje neviki lokukhuluma ngolimi lwabantu basemzansi. So those are the main pillars of improve the thing, but if we do not have human resource that is skilled and professional, we can't do anything. But of course, you need platforms, infrastructure becomes quite critical. And as well as then, you cannot work alone. President has spoken quite strongly about combat of different kinds. And here, one of the most important combats is the issue of key stakeholders to work with. And that will include NGOs, will include traditional leadership, it will include private sector. But then, we can't do this. One of the key mandates we have is to make sure that we provide funds for our health institutions. Honorable Chair, we've got 25 entities that report to the Department of Health in that. And they are categorized into four. But then, as you said, that by time we will just highlight some of those issues. But there are 25, 15 of which are remaining in the policy. So what is our strategic responsibilities? I will not talk through the vision for now, Chair. Just to say that our outcome goal, our related goals are four. We need to transform and make sure that it's productive. Now the issue of transformation is at the heart of this because culture was used as an instrument to drive division. But also to suppress the other component, majority of South Africans in the society. So that affected everything. This sector needs a lot of transformation in its organization. But also it needs to be productive in order to contribute to the economy of the country. Then we've got another goal that is talking to the integrated and inclusive society, and as envisaged by our constitution and its framework. We also have then the effective and efficient arts, culture, and heritage sector. And then we have the professional and capacitated sector. These are the goals from which then the fresh objectives are as follows. Under transform and productive sector, eventually we will develop, protect, and promote the cultural and creative sector. We will also then promote the heritage components, but also through the official languages components, and build relationships and partnerships locally and internationally, but also provide access to information. Then under integrated and inclusive society, the first objective there was to lead, coordinate, and implement social cohesion programs. And then under the efficient and effective sector, we talked to four objectives. Create a coherent policy and legislative framework, drive an integrated outcome-based research, planning, monitoring, and evaluation across the sector. We will not share what we are doing there, but to also implement sound financial management and control system, to strengthen and modernize archives and records management systems. A professional component talks to capacity building, building human resource capacity and promoting excellence. We will skip this slide, but we just wanted to indicate based on one of the strategy goals that we are talking here of release the value of the sector. And we had to do the lesson study that assisted us to determine what is the contribution of art culture in this country's economy, but also compared to the world. Because art and culture has been seen as a peripheral activity. Yet it contributes enormously to both the three challenges that government is facing. It creates job opportunities even under the most depressed economic times. It contributes to economic growth even under the most difficult times of the economy. But also, it's an equalizer. It creates opportunities for people to be able to really respond to fight that dignity. So, when you look at it, dealing with the triple challenges, we thought would like to just indicate that it just indicated many suggestions this study was done. And if you look at the contribution of the sector into the economy, it's 3.3 billion rand, which is about 1.7 for the total of the GDP. And then if you look at the multiplier effect of that, it gives you 5.7, which is 203 billion rand. On the employment component, the survey that was done indicates that 2.5% of jobs in this country is through the sector. And if you drill down around this component, majority of those who work in this sector are young people. And these are the people who are in fact out of employment. The government has said must focus. So we need to make sure that this sector is vibrant. We can be able to deal with the challenge of unemployment, particularly for young people. So if we proceed, Chairperson, we will skip this slide. I think you will see them at some point, but we just want to talk to the show friend why we should create a socially cohesive nation. And it talks to, if you look at the hope, if you look at the issue of confidence about the future for all, then the survey indicates that in 2017, 65% has spiked or an increase from 46% to 65%. South Africans have strong hope about the African future. So we will then proceed to slide, I think it's slide 14. We just move to the Honorable Chairperson, you spoke about the progress of the department. The department has got four main key branches. We've got a branch that deals with administration, and then we've got a branch that deals with agriculture, promotion, and development, under which there's that called the economic force. But then we also have got institutional government, and then we've got what we call heritage and promotion and preservation. Those are the four branches that we have. So talking then to that body of economy, this was designed to mainly assist in a number of interventions that deal with the area of art and culture, particularly for the artists themselves and how artists could benefit and how we can open up opportunities for them. So firstly, it has to stimulate demand, that's in that for the economy. This we do by expanding the supply of art, culture, and heritage, and that's creating more opportunities for the artists. You can do everything, but if there is no one who is interested in your work, there's nothing much that makes sense. So audience development and consumption of the products and the offerings by the art, culture, and heritage. But that also through this policy and economy strategy, we will also then be able to build heritage resources. And that is developing heritage areas to change the colonial and apartheid bias. In other words, transformation of the heritage landscape. But also then information gathering to collect evidence, analyze performance of the art. And that is why the department has to appoint what we call South African Culture Rights Observatory, which is SACO that is responsible for research, because we are the ones not just data informing our intervention. Then, of course, human capital development, which is focusing on the age identification and development of talent and employing the choice of career path, as well as development of cultural entrepreneurs. That's in that important economy and objective. If you look at the project, we'll not deal with the value chain, but just to say that you create and you produce, distribute, which is dissemination, and you can do that by having exhibitions, receptions, or transmissions, and you need the audience to consume your product. So under this Mzansi called economy, we've got what we call cultural events, one of the chair. And those cultural events are spread throughout the province. We try to customize this work so that the honorable members can have a sense of what's happening. in the budget is the 3 million. So we got a good breakdown, Honorable Chair, so that we can assist our members to see what's happening in that province. And the target there for this year is 80. And the flagship project also, we've got them broken down, and we will then move to the next slide, the Tory Ventures. And Honorable Chair, the Tory Ventures are really close and investing to support broader and cost-effective opportunities for the nation special housing that can then be exhibited to the youth and participated within the country and also abroad. We target in 20, despite quite an increase to drive this particular program because of its value. And that if you look at the past 5 years, none of them are done. And this year we're targeting 20 of those. And cultural citizens, also the area that we believe if we do market access and we do expose, but also we have opportunity for our artists to go to other countries to share various art and culture and heritage form, but also have opportunities for best practices to learn from those, but also open up partnerships through these cultural citizens. They are not an event that takes place just short and come. It is usually about 2 weeks that we are there, and with various forms of work that we do. Now, if we look at that, and we just indicate the countries that we'll be partnering with, look for Algeria, Brazil, China, Gabon, Uganda, Kenya, Russia, Senegal, and United Kingdom. The emphasis on Brazil, China, and then Russia and India is mainly driven by the fact that those countries alone, they account for about 39%, three countries account for about 39% of the population of the world. We are only having 56 million people. If we have an access to a market of China with 1.4 billion people, India is 1.3 billion, you can then see the opportunities that you create for the creatives of South Africa to have their products exposed to those billions of people throughout the world. And this is different, the network is called, but one of the key problems then is the public art. We try to reconnect this is going to show. But one of the key problems is public art, Honorable Chair and the members. This program is quite crucial and designed to provide opportunities for the creative arts practitioners in particular, who are able to help them to go to public spaces, which are at their challenge. And if we look at how much of work we have done there in the past 5 years, we see that 69 of these public art programs were done. And this year we're targeting to do 10. And this gives a really up-and-coming emerging artists to have the opportunity where we normally have what we call the graffiti. We now have opportunities to do proper public art. We recruit them. They are able to earn a living through this program. So it is one of the key areas. But also, if you look international trends, they will indicate that if you have art cities, you are able to do beautification of your city using local talent. So public art is one of the crucial programs and that will then provide support. The incubator program, I think we will be aware that if you do not invest in this program, building capacity, supporting emerging artists to eventually become their own entrepreneur, we will be in the future of this sector. And that is why the incubator programs are quite crucial. And they are intended to ensure that emerging artists eventually graduate to become established professional artists. And this initiative attracts the development of these artists and is divine that is designed to promote them with opportunity to practice their craft, but also to be involved in business modeling. Understand that this is not just art for art's sake, but also it's a way of it's a business. For some of the artists, we are aware of one of them, they will complain about dying poor or enormous, but the fact that they have opportunities, they have talent, but the business side, business skills are not there. And ground important for them to understand that art is not just for its own sake, but it's also it's a business. It drives development, and they should be able to benefit from it. So a number of these programs have been done, and we take the breakdown of the province, and this year we are targeting the Gota province that will have 18 of those. If you look at the success of Mpumalanga, for instance, shows Mpumalanga has got what we call cluster plans into better programs that we support, and they have got an art school. So it is easy for them to then provide skills training, industrial experience, and internship approaches to them, those artists, and then it has been really a successful area in Mpumalanga. So if we look at the next program, Market Access, this is really aimed at assisting our artists and creatives to have access and participate in various market platforms, but also to share their knowledge with the best in the world. So they are able to also then have the program, the opportunity in these platforms to sell their products. In that way, we are able to then support the artists to also earn a living, but also to market South Africa. But it's just important that they establish lasting partnerships in business. So if we look at the projects that we provide support to and with the breakdown of provinces, you'll see there, for instance, Akiko, KwaZulu-Natal, you look at South African Music Awards in Northwest, the Crown Gospel Awards, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, Baseline Festival. All these are the breakdowns of some of these market access opportunities that we provide for the artists through the program of art access. The Venice Biennale is currently running in Italy, where we've got three very bright young artists exposing their artworks in Venice. And so it's called Venice Biennale. We have to do everything to provide them with the opportunity to check down with what we call the South African command that they are doing. At then, this is aimed at also creating the opportunities for the artists who do their work, and sometimes they have to put it in their garages or in their background rooms because they don't know what to do with it. Department has to decide what we do with this opportunity that we have. So we created where we will collect and buy work of the artists so that then they can be able to have this work exposed and distributed. And as we speak, today we spare 2.4 million rand. 600 of these artists are paid directly so that they can then see the value of their work, rather than to pay them through the agents of the gallery, who will then also take a portion of their money. And these artists come from different places. We call them art bank because it's a collection of artworks that is put together, and then it's put at the exhibition, and then people also come. And we would hope that if the parliament would be able to look at that art bank and be able to select some artworks that can make your business better. Then the key programs on social cohesion, we've got what we call community conversation chair, we target 9 of those. The big plan for this year chair is that there will be a national social convention as a follow-up for the 2012 that was there. This is really one of the key things. So community conversation part of that build-up, but also to allow South Africans to engage on key social issues that affect the country. So it provides platforms for them to have those dialogues and conversations, sometimes intergenerational based more often, not to make sure that young people are also impacted with an opportunity from the elders to share what exactly is the direction the country is going, what are the social problems and the social challenges we need to address. So we've got what we call social cohesion advocates who then have the platform and we're putting them down there in the province, and they will be having 20 platforms that will be providing support in this financial year. National Days, the effort is there is just to share, Honorable Chairperson, that of course there are six, everybody knows, but the main essence here is that we need to make sure that all sectors of society participate. Because for a number of times now, in terms of that day, this is mainly dominated by the Africans with the racial groups not being involved or less involved. And therefore then the strategy is to create room and make sure that we engage with every South African to feel welcomed and being part and parcel of celebrating our national days. As we know that this year's national day for the Women on the Night of Caucus will be in Northwest and taking place in Freiburg. The National Team Bonds is one of the programs working with the Department of Education in particular to make sure that the flag are distributed in schools, each school must have a flag and South African flag, but they must understand also it's not just installing it, it also goes with what is the value of the flag, but also with what we call the toolkit that assists the learners to understand our national anthem, to understand the national symbols, as well as the preamble to the Constitution. And we distributed in 6,000 of those. The issue of transformation of the landscape is really aimed at making sure that all the offensive names, as well as the, this is part of the bigger program to transform the national heritage landscape. So we published that, we just explained in the process there on what does this mean in a nutshell. That we will have the process where there will be work done at local level, someone can propose the names to be changed, and then that process will go. The minister does not go out to say, I'm changing this name, I'm changing this name, or I'm renaming this place. But it's a process where he is an architect to make sure that once the council has proposed those names and submitted them, then that is officialized and approved, and then it can then be taken through the gazette, and then it gets finalized. So it is just to make sure that there are provinces where these names remain unchanged in the offensive. And it's important that those provinces are encouraged to initiate those processes to change the offensive names and make sure that we move in speed in transforming our heritage landscape in the public spaces. Akifu School is a program that assists us to have, we have a breakdown there, but it's just a program that just like sports, and we need to make sure that there are professionals who train young people about art and various art forms. And so we've got a program that's called Akifu Sports that will try and make sure that we have the training of young people and part and parcel of developing and preservation of art. And therefore then we deploy Akifu Schools that. Community Art Centers and Community Art Program is there. Just giving a breakdown there of programs to province, and that will be taking place. And that which we have done in 5 years. And if you look at that, this year we are using a different approach. That's why if you look at the numbers in line, because we are using what we call centers of excellence. So in other words, each province, whether it's the Community Art Center, and then it will then work with the other art centers around it to make sure that we are able to monitor work and everything that in these community art centers. sure that all those who are our icons, who have done the best and are most knowledgeable, we are able to download from their brains into a book, which will then assist us to use that work as we go forward and move from one generation to another. We have started with the two most well-known icons who are regarded as trainers, and that is Mamadou as well as Dr. Issa Mahlangu. We have done that to make sure that Mamadou Mahlangu's work is not lost to Zimbabwe, that it is transferred from one generation to another. And if you look at Mamadou Mahlangu's work, also it's quite unique. But we need to download from him, make sure that he is able to provide us with how she does it and be able to use that as part of our work for God. So this year we are planning to do another issue. Language development, I indicated earlier, just to contribute here in terms of development of indigenous languages and deployment and for what we call development of terminology. So that, of course, there is an argument that language is can't be used as scientific language and is underdeveloped. So there are technologies that are developed in all the official languages. Just to make sure that whether it's pharmaceutical, it's mathematics, we are able to have the right technology so that this then can be used, whether it's in education, higher education, scientific fields, and we are able to use it. So there are various technologies that we develop, and then we can just share with you, but it's in the various fields. What we call them as the hypers. Then on the infrastructure program, we for various number of infrastructure programs at various stages, and that includes the Nelson Mandela House and rehabilitation of the prison Franklin State. So then it becomes a very clear interpretive center, a heritage prison. But we also have the National Health Data, which looks at how we can develop a heritage prison in honor of all men and women who have contributed to the struggle, but also in politics and resistance, as well as after heritage and culture. At the planning and design stage, we've got actually the essential, it's under the Heritage Prison Development Project, and you'll be discussing under the prison, as well as Raymond Sanibaba, Raymond Michal. Then it's construction, we've got Sarah Bachman, and then Mama Winnie Mandela at Frankfurt, where we're working as well as the Omar Chango project that we're in, if I'm not remembering. We also then do the issue of libraries program, conditional grants, the CFO will just take us through the breakdown of the budget. So, let me move what we call the breakdown of also, and the two of those that we intend to close this year financially, and then the financial profits. And let me skip the rest to allow just the Honorable Chair to allow and the CFO just to clarify this. But on quality and legislation process, we just want to indicate the work that is awaiting the Parliament, and that is the revised white paper on arts and culture. And which has been has really gone through the process, but we cabinet then is expected, sorry, Parliament is expected to run. And then the South African Library and Information Services Bill has submitted and approved by the Senate and will have to report to the Parliament. So is the policy on underwater and cultural activities was approved by the Senate. So policy on repatriation of human beings and the heritage objects. And this is to be submitted to Cabinet by end of this financial year. Then the policy framework for national museum developed, and then also was approved by Cabinet. The living cultural policy developed and subsequently approved by Cabinet. We are at a contracting phase with the issue of the National Library and Information Department. So those are the legislative programs that I wish the department is simple to contribute to the
violated here in the chamber in the institutionalized and the departmental baseline of 3.1 billion, and the conditional grant which goes to the province of 1.5 billion. Then in terms of earmark funds, there were earmark funds which have been friends, which in terms of treasury regulation you only use it as it is stated in this particular chamber. Because when the ring fence fund in the current financial year for 3 million, you've got the community diversity services at national of 8 million, you've got the for parcel brought 120 million, the capital infrastructure allocation of 524 million, the National Human Video Foundation allocation of 120 million. Bazaar for research professionals for 6 million. Then Zanzibar Golden Economy Strategic Project, 3.2 million. And the community, liability grant of 1.5 and employees, compensation of employees at 272 million. In the interest of time, I will go to the pie chart which shows how that 4.6 billion is being spent by the department. If you look at it, 80% of our budget funds are spent outside the department. That means it is transferred to the island provinces, it is transferred also to our public entities, the 25 entities that the DG mentioned, and only 20% is spent within the department, which amount to 920 million. Then look, 80%, how it is also divided weekly, is also divided into the larger portion of it goes to our departmental agencies at 1.8 billion, and the second biggest pie is shared with the provinces at 1.5 billion, higher education institutions 9 billion, households 3 million, foreign government 5 million, public corporation 102 million, and non-profit organization 196 million. And that 120 which is spent by the department is also divided as follows. The larger portion of this is our student services at 24% and 403 million, and followed by compensation of employees at 232 million. Heritage Action is the third biggest at 236 million, and also 9 million for our machinery and equipment. Let's move to slide 56, which shows the allocation to the provinces, which in the current financial year, Eastern Cape will be receiving 169 million, Free State 168 million, Housing 167 million, KwaZulu-Natal 184 million, Limpopo 144 million, Mpumalanga 164 million, Northwest 124 million, Northern Cape 168 million, and Western Cape will receive 186 million. All in all, that's 1.5 billion for the provincial library. And the following slide, 27 members, is the allocation to the 25 entities. In the interest of time, I will just leave it there, but all of them are allocated for care kind expenditure, normal operational expenditure, and some of them push up for the project for CAPEX. They will have also a digital transfer. And that is the summary of the expenditure.
Thanks a lot, DG and your team. Welcome, Honorable Minister. Your apologies accepted by the members. But there was really a big gap in introducing the, you know, like putting all the politics behind the department and the strategic objective in terms of where you are going. But we're able to follow what's happening. But some of the questions, because there's no time to engage, we're going to send the questions to the department. in writing, and then we'll get the answers later. And then what we'll do, we'll have time where we'll engage with the department, at least on information sharing. We are new, some of us, in this area of arts and culture, sports and recreation. Yeah, through those we'll be able to close the gaps in terms of all of us being in the same boat going forward. Let's give you this opportunity to, you know, to talk to us, and yeah, and then after that we'll close the meeting. Thanks. Over to you, Cabinet Minister.
Sorry, Chair. Perhaps the Chair can guide me in terms of time to the program and the
We have a debate in the afternoon, so we'll give you 16 minutes.
Okay. No. Maybe, thank you, Chair. Thanks,
Okay, we'll give you 10 minutes.
Okay. Chair, I was going to at first say that it would be important we can arrange and come and have conversation on an ongoing basis with the committee, because once we have said members are new, we are also new in this term, because we are in a process of merging two departments into one. So this presentation today is the last one of its kind. So we will, going forward, be coming as soon as one department starting from the DG. We have a very difficult task of choosing one DG amongst the DGs here. One DG responsible for finances and so on. So we are in that process. But the major thing, Chair, I can say that without getting into details and taking or assuming that we agree that we have to be interacting and engaging on an ongoing basis, just to say that both the sports segment of our work and that and culture, our approach is more of trying to articulate and emphasize on training. Basically, the philosophy is teaching people how to fish, because many a times when you have situations where you have grants, where you have resources to subsidize people, government generally becomes a myth. Everybody has an idea, even if it's not an idea. But we are moving towards that line. If you look at the sport, for instance, one of the emphasis we are making is that we want to take a longitudinal approach to sport. South Africans normally think about the next tournament, about the next match. Hence, we have this thing with the football, which is the number one last sport in the country. Within 20 years, we have changed about 16 coaches. What it indicates is that there is no stability. So what creates stability? Whilst developing the grassroots level, people are going to be part of the pipeline. Sports, school sports, in communities, and so on. But build an academy which is going to prepare people that are going to look for Olympics, so that you are institutionalizing the talent people have. Your talent itself is not enough. You need a skill or an ability. Just an example, if you go to arts, many people call themselves singers. Maybe they are singers, because they sell their things, somebody buys can that person be able to engage with the notes, put the notes here? Will they be able to read and understand it? So part of the problem is that we have not concentrated on this. You will see also in Anthem Culture we are segment today, we are emphasizing on academics, teaching people proper skills to be skills. You know, so that if your organizer that is not selling tomorrow, but it has a skill, you can go anywhere else and be productive as it were. So we are taking that line too. We think that when we do that, we'll be able to fill the gap. Because this area of sports, arts and culture is what we call the golden economy. It has that potential to grow. And we seek to professionalize the entire area. We have, in 2015, established a research hub, the South African Research Observatory, whose task was to assess the impact of the creative economy in South Africa. Now it's going to be added with sports going forward to scientifically, not just in an unprofessional way, guess what is happening here, what is the economically the contribution of the sector to the GDP, and so on and so forth. So we are moving towards that line too. We are moving in speed in trying to conscientize our society about the transformation of the heritage landscape. Digi spoke about it. And we have no illusion, we know there's going to be pushback. If you take, for instance, an area which we declared in October last year, which was wrongly named as Grant's Town, is now Makati. The significance of that is that every year we subsidize an arts festival, a national arts festival, which takes an international character. The Makanda Arts Festival is second only to Edinburgh Festival in the world in terms of support. And the kind of economic injection they make in that part of the country is important. But what's important about the names is that we are seeing all these people are coming from all over the world must now understand who was Makanda Gandhi. It's part of our country. We're changing the heritage landscape. As opposed to Grahamstown. Grahamstown, our national colonizers made the point that he is not exposed who he was. A violent king like Ochaba who put up men, women, and children in that part of the country for their land. And then we have that person occupying public spaces. So as part of educating the world, we must say that, I don't know whether you can touch on that, we must say that Limpopo has been the leading province in the changing of the heritage landscape, whether it's roads, whether it's cities, and so on. But it has been in the lead. I don't know now. I think we must check whether it still is. But we must give the information to our people so that they understand that it's not the minister who initiates. People must initiate. There's an outstanding air of Makhale, for instance, in the book. And that space still needs to be entered into. Some technical things which may not be matter. But we have to write also. So there's a lot there which I think we need to fill in. Our national teams are from a lot of competition, continental, world competition. We didn't do very well in most of them. Perhaps with the exception of the girls' netball. But in all these other sports and codes, where rugby is still coming, such now, which cannot sustain. But you know that when you get there, everything is sustained. So I'll hand a check and say that thank you for indulging me with the committee. And I hope we will build this relationship of conversation, because we need to converse about our society. We need to. Both the parties have been charged the responsibility in cabinet of outcome voting, which is nation building and social cohesion. If there is anything which is going to unite the people of South Africa, it's what? It's us, it's council. So we need to work, you know, mechanisms to ensure that that is the objective is achieved. Thank you very much. I hope I didn't take the time.
No, thanks, Minister. We're looking forward to having, this is the beginning actually of many, lots of meetings to come. And we, like I said earlier, that there are certain questions that will be, you know, we present the questions in writing, and then from there we'll have a session where, you know, people can, so that we can interact, get the answers, and then interact with the discussion and debate. And thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. The minutes will be dealt with in the next meeting, because we have a debate in the next hour. And good luck to those who are debating. Thank you very much.